I'm Celeste Headlee. There's a word you're going to hear a lot about in the coming months, gerrymandering. The dictionary definition of gerrymander from Merriam-Webster is to divide land into election districts to give one political party an electoral majority while concentrating the voting strength of the opposition in as few districts as possible. But come on, Merriam and or Webster, that definition hardly explains what gerrymandering really is. And a lot of people don't really understand the incredible impact it has on the nation. So, let's break it down.
Ooh, break it down, baby, because I want y'all all to know. Let me break it down for you again.
The practice of gerrymandering started with the founding fathers of the country. Patrick Henry did not approve of the Constitution.
Give me liberty or give me death!
Henry also didn't much like James Madison because Madison wrote most of the Constitution. So just months after the Constitution was ratified, Patrick Henry convinced Virginia's legislature to gerrymander the 5th Congressional District.
All in favor?
Aye!
All opposed?
Nay.
He wanted to force Madison to run against the very popular James Monroe and then lose. But it didn't work. Madison not only won the race, but eventually became the 4th president. But the practice wasn't called gerrymandering back then because the word hadn't been invented. The word is a completely American invention, like dental floss and jazz. The word gerrymandering was first used by the Boston Gazette in March of 1812. The governor of Massachusetts at that time was Elbridge Gerry. That's Gerry with a G. The governor signed a bill that year that redrew his state's districts and helped his party win a bunch of seats in the state Senate. One of the most contorted, unnatural districts was in the Boston area. And when you looked at it on a map, it looked a little like an amphibian. So the newspaper joined the governor's last name, Gerry, with the name of the slimy creature, salamander, and a new word was born. It caught fire immediately. It was used more than 80 times in American newspapers between March and December of 1812. I think we can safely say it went viral.
It's had 200,000 views in 3 hours.
Oh my God!
Since then, gerrymandering has been a common practice. One of the most notorious examples occurred in the late 1800s. That's when Republicans used their control of Congress to create 2 states out of 1 territory.
Hi! Do you like South Dakota but don't want to see Mount Rushmore? Come to North Dakota.
The reason we have both a North and a South Dakota is that the GOP wanted 2 states that favored its party instead of 1 to gain an edge in the presidential election. The law recognizes more than 1 kind of gerrymander, though. Let me explain. There's racial and there's political. Political gerrymandering redraws districts according to party affiliation. How many Democrats? How many Republicans? Racial draws the map according to, well, race. And that can be both positive and negative.
It's artificial to talk about race and party as being completely separate.
Negative racial gerrymandering means districts were designed to split demographic groups up, so they're not the majority in any district and can't elect their candidate. The Voting Rights Act made that illegal.
It is wrong, deadly wrong, to deny any of your fellow Americans the right to vote in this country.
The opposite is called affirmative gerrymandering. The Voting Rights Act had a hand in this as well. Some districts were created that purposely concentrated the number of minorities in one place where their votes would have more power. Gerrymandering can be broken down into even more categories, though. Political insiders have different terms for different kinds of gerrymandering. There's cracking. That's where you spread voters around as many districts as possible so they don't have the majority anywhere. Basically, you're cracking a voting block apart. Then there's packing. This is the opposite of cracking. This is where you pack all the voters of one type in one district so they can't influence other districts. Hijacking is focused not on voters but on candidates. When you hijack, you redraw districts so that 2 incumbents in the same party have to run against each other. That way, one of them will inevitably lose, and you've eliminated a political rival.
That's the beauty of gerrymandering. Instead of the voters getting to pick their leaders, leaders get to pick their voters.
And finally, kidnapping.
They're going to take you.
Kidnapping means you take a popular legislator and move his constituents into another district. That way, you basically remove his base of support and make it very difficult for him or her to win. And listen, the law is not clear on gerrymandering at all. The Supreme Court has weighed in on the issue many times, many, many times, but has never delivered a conclusive opinion. So you can expect this most American of words, gerrymandering, to show up more and more in your newsfeed. And now for more, let's bring in an actual expert.
And that expert is Kennesaw State University Professor of Political Science, Kerwin Swint. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Did we get everything basically right?
Hey, that was great. You could teach a class.
Well, I don't think I could, actually. I'm pretty impatient with young people. But let's, we mentioned that we're going to hear, we will constantly hear court cases on gerrymandering, and we are seeing them right now in Georgia. What is at the base of this case that's being brought by the NAACP?
The base of the case is there are two districts among 17 that were redistricted 2 years ago in 2015 by the Georgia legislature. These two districts have a composition that is very, very competitive between Republicans and Democrats. And the accusation is that the Republican majority in 2015 used race as the primary determinant for moving these Democratic voters out of a district that would more likely elect a Republican. I mean, that's the point. They're trying to move out voters that they think are going to vote against them to make that district more hospitable to, in this case, the Republican candidate. And the accusation is that they use race. Now, if they can prove that in court, you know, if you can go into court and prove that the legislature used race as the predominant factor, then you have a good chance of getting that map thrown out.
That's what happened in North Carolina.
Exactly, exactly.
And it was thrown out.
Right.
However, there are times at which the courts have allowed you to consider race when you create a district. When is it okay?
There are cases where they want to give minority voters an opportunity to elect a representative who is a minority. And so there have been cases where the courts have allowed those kinds of districts to be allowed because it's going to give minorities more voting rights.
Rather than what's called cracking these districts up to spread the voters out so they never get a majority.
Yeah, cracking is a tactic to split up the power of a vote and make it less impactful. And that's against the Voting Rights Act.
Why do we let politicians draw their own districts?
It's a tricky question because the Constitution allows the state governments to conduct elections and redraw the legislative districts after every census to make sure that the population
is equal.
Once every 10 years. But the wording also says after the census as necessary. And so state legislatures use that as necessary to give them the rationale for doing it more often than just once every 10 years. And so they have been doing it in Georgia and a lot of other states, sometimes every other year, every 3 years, when they argue that the population has changed in a given district, making it unequal to the surrounding areas. And so they use that as an opportunity to redraw those lines, and gerrymandering comes into play when they redraw those lines to make it safer for their party's candidate.
Is there a way to change the system of drawing districts that might make that less likely? And look, both parties, everybody is guilty of drawing districts in a way that benefits their party and tries to consolidate power. Fair, right?
Right, absolutely.
So is there a way to remove that problem and make it less political, less partisan?
You bet. And I've been advocating this for a while. There is such a thing called an independent redistricting commission. And ideally, that would take some of the politics out of it. Not all of it, but a lot of it. There are 13 states in the country where the state legislature doesn't do the line drawing, but it's done by an independent commission charged with that authority. They then give the maps to the legislature for a vote. Those states, though, almost every one of them have been able to do that because the Constitution allows voters something called the initiative.
The state constitution.
The state constitution, right. And so voters can come together, pass a referendum without the state legislature even being involved and put the item on the ballot to be approved by the voters. We can't do that here in Georgia. Most states can't do that because we don't have that power. So it must go through the state legislature to get on the ballot. And that's the whole problem.
So have we tried in Georgia to change that? I mean, to create an independent commission and then it didn't make it through the legislature?
For over a decade, we've been trying that. First in the Purdue administration back in 2006, I was actually part of a bipartisan commission that looked at the issue and recommended an independent redistricting commission. The legislation was introduced in the state Senate. It didn't get passed. And it's been introduced almost every year since then by legislators, Republicans and Democrats in many cases, who just see the value of an independent group instead of, as you say in your piece, the legislators choosing their own voters. That doesn't sound very democratic.
It does not. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Kerwin Swint. He's a Kennesaw State University professor of political science. And we are talking about gerrymandering, especially in regard to a lawsuit brought against Georgia and the lawmakers here, claiming that lawmakers violated federal voting rights law by moving black voters out of two specific districts and white voters in order to protect Republican candidates. If you have questions or comments, you know how to reach us, especially questions, because I know that this is very confusing. Our number is 404-500-9457. You can tweet us. It's at OST Talk. Now, one thing that often gets messed up in this whole discussion of gerrymandering is sometimes people don't understand the difference between voting rights in, like the case that we just saw in Cobb County, where they had to reopen registration, and the choosing of districts. How much of this is influenced by the Supreme Court changes to the Voting Rights Act?
Well, it's been a huge change because before 2013, Georgia was one of the states that had to have the Justice Department, the U.S. Justice Department, review any changes to the legislative maps at the congressional level and the state level.
Was that deserved?
It was deserved. I mean, Georgia is a state that has a history of racial discrimination when it comes to voting rights, when it comes to civil rights. There were nine states and some localities that through the history of racial discrimination, Georgia was one of the states that had to have its changes approved by the Justice Department. Now, in 2013, the Supreme Court threw out part of the original Voting Rights Act, and no longer that was the case. So Georgia no longer has to have the Justice Department review its maps. And so now it's up to the individual voting groups, the individual political parties, to bring suit in federal court if they think that a violation of the Voting Rights Act is present.
We have a question from Todd Rehm, who asks, were any states under the VRA preclearance requirement among those now using independent redistricting commissions?
Not as far as I know. Most of the independent redistricting commissions are in the western states, upper Midwest, that have the voter initiative. The states that fell under the requirement to have their maps approved by the Justice Department normally are states where in the state constitution you don't have the initiative.
I won't ask you to comment on the legality of the lawsuit going through, but have you looked at the districts that were drawn? Do you have an opinion on whether they were drawn fairly and whether they serve voters' interests?
Well, the maps were drawn. There's one in Gwinnett County, one in Henry County. Those are the two maps that are in dispute here. And the Republican majority says that the population changes necessitated changes to the actual map. The thing is, it's very, very difficult, and this is where the federal courts have so much trouble, very, very difficult to disentangle race and party when you're looking at these districts and you're looking at changes in maps. And that's the hard part. So the litigants in this case are going to have to prove that there was a racial predominance in their decision making. It's difficult to do, but it's not impossible.
Because it's legal to draw districts and consider party.
Exactly, exactly. And so the federal courts have allowed these kinds of gerrymandering cases to stand if it's simply partisan maneuvering, Republicans or Democrats. It's only when the racial aspect comes into play that they will throw out a map. But it's possible. In Texas, a couple of months ago, a federal district court threw out a map. This was for a U.S. House district, where they were able to prove, the litigants were able to prove, that there was significant racial animosity towards Hispanics in those particular districts. And they did this through subpoenaing documents, committee statements, to show that there was a strong racial bias present. So it seems to me that's what's going to have to happen in this case if it is going to be successful. You're going to have to prove in court that the motivation was racial, not partisan.
So if, let's say that at some future date, Georgia actually ends up getting an independent a redistricting commission, which is something that you are pushing for and have pushed for years. How does that then function? How does what's the difference between an independent commission's decision-making process on how to draw districts and the legislature's?
Well, it would take it out of the hands of the state legislators, you know, who have a vested interest in what these districts look like. And how it's usually constructed is both political parties nominate individuals to serve on this commission. And in some cases, there are independents on the commission or members of the state court on the commission. So there's a rough racial, there's a rough partisan balance on these commissions. So it's a step in the right direction. It's not going to eliminate politics.
Because everybody has opinions.
Everybody's a human being, have opinions, and they're going to be representing, at least some of them are going to be representing the parties. But it's a major step in the right direction, in my opinion.
Do you think at this point, some have gone so far as to say that the way that the nation has been gerrymandered, that votes aren't free and fair anymore? Do you go that far?
I don't know if I go that far, simply because it depends on which party is in power. I mean, there are redistricting cases in Maryland, for example, where the Democratic Party has a majority and they do the exact same thing. So, you know, the courts have looked at it as a political issue, a political battle that's waged at the ballot box. And whichever party gets a majority gets to have more influence on all the laws, including redistricting cases.
And if this case is, if the NAACP is successful in court, does that mean that they have to go back to quite literally the drawing board and start over?
That's right. If they prevail in court, then the state legislature is ordered to redraw those districts in a way that they can prove that race was not the primary factor.
Although, you know, don't get too comfortable in your district wherever you are, because as Kerwin mentioned, they seem to redraw these pretty often. Kerwin Swint is a professor at Kennesaw State University focusing on political science. Kerwin, thank you so much.
Sure, you bet.